Welcome to Palcast, your creator national podcast.
God Network News, episode 145. Welcome, GNN fans, to another episode of God Network News, the podcast that tells you what God's doing around the world. Not what CNN tells you, but what GNN tells you is going on in the world. If you're tired of listening to all of that crisis network news and you want to hear what God's doing, well, give us a listen. The beginning of this year, we were celebrating New Year's 2020 at our home in Thailand. And my wife prepared a wonderful gathering of our friends, close colleagues, and we had a precious friend of ours, Todd Johnson, who is one of the foremost missions strategists, foremost mission researchers, and foremost mission publishers of reference books that are used by mission agencies and mission workers and mission trainers around the world. Todd Johnson is an incredible man. Todd started his mission research career many years ago with a man named David Barrett, who was a well-known mission researcher and publisher all over the world by mission agencies around the world, highly respected. Todd was mentored by David for many years and took over his ministry when David passed away. My wife will introduce Todd and tell you where he's working and what he's doing in this episode. The next three episodes will be of Todd sharing a message that I think is very important for many of us that are listening and those of us that maybe who are not missionaries or involved in the mission effort would probably be interested to hear this as well. And that is, what is the future of frontier missions?
When I was doing some of this work, I was in Singapore, and I love the Straits Times, which, because we've lived in Singapore on two occasions, great newspaper. And I was reading in the Straits Times this fact here, that 9 out of 10 Singaporeans are comfortable living and working with people of other religions and ethnicities. And I thought to myself, you know, that's remarkable, because that's not true in a lot of other places. There was just a study in the United States showing that white evangelicals are actually the least friendly to immigrants and refugees. Only about 20-some percent of white evangelicals think it's a good idea for people from other countries to live in the United States. What that told me is that, again, frontier missions is all about reaching people in other religions. The irony is that, as we heard earlier, the Americans feel like they should be writing more and more books. Americans that are the least friendly to other people in other religions are writing the books about how to reach other people. And when I was in Singapore, I got a chance to talk to Singaporeans, and I said, we need to listen to your books. We got to stop writing our own books, listen to you. You're comfortable in this context. Singaporean Christians are comfortable. We need to hear from them, and Thai Christians too. When I was able to speak with Thai Christians, I said, don't translate any more of our books. Write your own books, because we need to hear from you about what it's like, because we are failing terribly. If we're not, we don't even like people. I went to a seminar on reaching Muslims in the United States. It's a group that's been around a long time. And I sat next to a guy. He said, you know, I don't like Muslims. I don't think they should be in this country. But, you know, I suppose I should do something. I mean, it's just so sad. I could barely believe it. you know, I hate these people, but I'm going to reach them for Christ. You know, that you don't want those people leading frontier missions. That's what I'm getting at. And of course, our leaders aren't all like that. I'm just saying that's the context and the situation. The other challenge we have, as I as many of you have probably been, I was in Mongolia last year, had a really wonderful time, and the leadership there, and the top leadership, you know, the Bible societies and other people were telling me, we have a big problem, we're too Western and we're too Korean. There's 600 Korean missionaries in Mongolia, and we have got to recover our Mongolian culture in relation to Christianity. So they're going back and actually retranslating the Bible. And even in Genesis and so on, it was completely different than what had been translated by other people. So we just got to be careful, you know, about that. Another thing, we have a friend in Uzbekistan who's a Bible translator, and they just did a wonderful translation. And she said, well, and she has 2 degrees from my seminary in Old Testament and biblical languages. And she said, we decided we're going to translate the best Western commentary on, you know, on the Bible. So they started in Genesis. They translated a few pages. And then they thought, this is crazy. This, you know, this from, it was from Europe. This commentary is so different than our own culture. Our own culture, our own Uzbek culture, is very close to the biblical culture, and we're going taking this bizarre detour through a highly individualistic culture to try to understand Genesis. And they said, they stopped translating. We're not going to translate this because it's so far from the culture, and we're so close. Why are we making this big detour? But most of the material that's all around the world in global Christianity is from the West still. See, that's the issue. So here's another thing. Now we'll get straight to frontier missions. In 1900, 54% of the world was unevangelized. In 2000, it was about 30%. We just released figures 2 weeks ago. We think it's about 28% that have never heard of Christ. That's a lot of progress, right? But here's the one that is for today, and that is, we think in 2050 it's still going to be 28%, and this is what has to be grappled with. Why is that the case with as many good things that are happening? And our single the single piece of research that we've done, I think, that shows the gap is that 87% of Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists don't personally know a Christian. So I think there's a relationship gap, and the only way to solve that gap is to send people who are good at relationships, okay, and who are comfortable living with people of other religions and ethnicities. So that's why I think the shift of Christianity to the South has to be a shift of missionaries, and missionaries not carrying out Western plans, because that's been the way that it's been done up to this point, is that Western people have said, we want to welcome people from all over the world to our table to do our agenda. That's very common. Very common. That's the way that things are done. But something new, you're very familiar with this. I'm not telling you anything new, but I'm just saying from my perspective, something new is happening. And here's friends of ours that we're going to be with next year again. She was telling us, some of you probably know her, actually. I know she relates to Create.
You're listening to God Network News Podcast with your host, Cal Curtis. Look up our website at godnetworknews.com.
They had this special painting done for their family. And she's been our host in Uzbekistan. And she told us, you know, the Uzbek church is not very strong or big. They actually sent missionaries to another place. I probably shouldn't say here, so another place. And that was another country even. They sent people to another country, and the people they met there, they said, you're the first people who are just like us who have told us this good news. Because there's a large group of people in that country who are very different culturally, who've been trying to evangelize them. But when they showed up, they said, you're just like us. And they really had a really terrific time with them because of that. So I think this is where things are headed. I think this is what my hope is, but I'm saying our assessment is still based, I think, on things continuing as they are. Because actually the resource base from the West is not shrinking, it's getting stronger. There's more independent movements, there's more money. So it's not gonna go away. It's gonna be hard to take initiative apart from that, I think. And even our best organizations still are inviting people to the table. So my hope is that the kitchen is open. And you invite Africans in the kitchen, you're gonna get food that really tastes good, you know, instead of whatever is in there right now. But so I won't take that any further, but I'll stop there and just say, again, sort of from a very broad view, these are some of the things that I've been hearing, listening to, and feeling that that are going to help determine the future. I think what I'm saying is we're not going to get where we want to go in frontier missions unless the kitchen changes. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it would be nice if Africans were in the kitchen. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the future of where we want to go is Africans in the kitchen. As the example I was giving, and Asians in the kitchen, Oceanians in the kitchen, Latin Americans in the kitchen. I think my own assessment of the plateau of frontier missions is precisely this. As long as Western people make all the decisions, I'm not saying, and I think Western people need to be a part of the future of frontier missions. This isn't about the decline of the West, it's about the rise of the rest. To quote Fareed Zakaria's post-American world. A post-American world is not one where Americans have no place. It's a one where Americans learn how to get on the same level as everybody else instead of, this is economics, of course. I really like that. So it's not Western people going home and saying, I have nothing to do. It's quite the opposite. In fact, Western people are really doing fabulous work on contextualization, some of the best. So I think Western people have a crucial future in frontier missions, but it's not leading everything. That's what I think has to change. And I think when that changes, we'll make more progress. That's what I'm saying. I might be wrong, and I'm only saying it really from my role as somebody who's trying to pay attention to what's going on around the world. But it seems to me that's another pivot we're at, because we, you know, with Trisha's parents and many others saying we're going to reach every people group by the year 2000, which was a noble, you know, goal to have. Now we're 20 years later, we're still a long ways. And I think the reason we're still a long ways is because the shift of Christianity has not really made its way into frontier missions. I'm speaking very generally, there's lots of exceptions, but in one sense, the exceptions prove the rule, I think. So, yep, so we don't want to encounter, you like this? We don't want to encounter Christianity as a white religion when it is a truly diverse religion. That's and we've had a personal experience in Thailand where we had a Buddhist landlord who was a CMU professor, and I gave him a copy of my atlas as a housewarming gift at the very end, and he looked through it and he said, Christianity is not a white religion, is it? Because he had thought it was, and he saw all these maps and charts, and I thought to myself, wow, that's what I want to say, you know? Yeah, so for him, it was an academic thing, you know, as another professor, he looked through it, and I thought, yeah, that's it, it's not a white religion. And one last thing, because I'm going to be giving this talk in about a month at Gordon-Conwell, I have like 20 minutes to say what got me into this work, and it's all going to be about my time at Khao Dang in Thailand. And what happened there is I was on a YWAM team, and there were a lot of people from Hawaii and California, and then they all left. I was the only American left, and there was two Malaysians, a Filipino, a South African, and a Swiss person. I think there might have been one more person, maybe French. I mean, we were an odd team, mostly women, and we went to witness to the Cambodians, and had really a spectacular time, as many did in the camps. And I remember my Cambodian students looking at me one day and saying, "Who are you people?" Because we weren't from one country, we were from all these countries around the world, and we were saying the same message. And they said, "Who are you people that you have this kind of a religion that's just all over the place?" And I thought, what an ideal situation. I've always thought if you could bring a team from all over the world to witness every time you witness, I mean, it's not practical, of course, but it had a big impact. And it changed me too, because it introduced me to the global Jesus. So for me, that was really an important pivot. And that's, I'm going to tell that story when I talk to my chapel. So.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider donating to help us continue to bring exciting stories fresh from the field. Visit our website at godnetworknews.com and select the PayPal link on the right side of the page, or consider becoming a Patreon partner to receive access to more valuable materials exclusive to our members.